This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
Hey, I would say even if Cottleville is not in your neck of the woods, come on out and see us tomorrow at the Knights of Columbus Hall. It's going to be awesome. We have some listeners checking in with me about the future dates. We got Assumption in South County next Friday, Queen of All Saints the week following, St. Mary Magdalene. That's a new one for us on the stop.
Yeah.
On the 4th of April in Ott's Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois on the 11th.
Cottleville has that good fried shrimp. Jane loves the hush puppies. Oh, the fried shrimp. I'm thinking about it right now.
Man, I'm still going back to that po' boy from last week for sure.
Delicious.
Well, I feel like, you know, when we talk about Doge, I always have to play my sounder here. Don't I?
And now, this Doge update.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa.
On the Mark Reardon Show.
I like that. I like that a lot. Neil McCluskey is with us. He's the director of Cato Institute Center for Educational Freedom. We're going to talk a little bit about the Department of Education, whether it's realistic to peel that back, and some other things related to DOGE. Neil has also written a book called The Fractured Schoolhouse, Reexamining Education for a Free, Equal, and Harmonious Society. How are you, Neil? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing okay this afternoon. We have a beautiful, beautiful day here, and we're fans of Doge here on this radio station, and I'm certainly a fan. But let me kind of start here with the Department of Education. You wrote a book about this. You know, we're in a situation here where I feel very strongly that we're not addressing this learning loss issue from the pandemic. There's so many things out there that don't get discussed, and you have a Department of Education that's supposed to maybe focus on some of these things, and in, I think, a lot of people's view, they spend a lot of money that doesn't have ROI. So what would you say overall about the idea to get rid of the Department of Education?
No, I think it's absolutely the right idea to get rid of the Department of Education. For one thing, it's unconstitutional. So the Constitution gives the federal government specific enumerated powers, the only ones it has, and education's not among them. So it shouldn't be doing anything in education, much less having a Department of Education, a cabinet level department. So for that reason alone, it should go. But we also have no evidence that it's done any good educationally. What we see is it basically sucks up taxpayer money, bundles it with some red tape, and then returns the remains after they pay themselves back to states and districts, and that's not productive for anybody.
No, it's kind of a money laundering operation, isn't it? And I agree with you. And, you know, the thing that I like to remind people of, I moved here to St. Louis when I was 14, 1979. That was the year that they created the Department of Education. So it hasn't been around really that long, but it's one of those things when you say that, Neil, you know this, to the average person who's not dialed into what's going on, they think like, oh my gosh, why would you cut a department that is dedicated to education, right?
Yeah, I mean, we hear that all the time, and it makes it easy to kind of demagogue keeping it because, like, well, it's about education, and education is good, and don't we want the federal government to be doing things that are good? But it doesn't actually educate anyone. You know, it's not like the military where they actually go out and they do things like fight the wars. It's a bureaucracy. It's money exchange. It has nothing to do with actually teaching people. And bureaucracy tends to have kind of a bad connotation because it's slow to move and it wastes a lot of money. And that's what the Department of Education is. So just because it has education in the name doesn't mean it's educating people.
The constitutional point is very, very important as well, because, you know, and I'm open to rooting out wasteful spending in whatever department. But a lot of folks, and you've probably noticed this in the legacy media on the left, their talking point is, well, you better go after defense. And I'm fine with that if you want to look at some things in the Department of Defense. But unlike the Department of Education, the Department of Defense is constitutionally required. That is a constitutional mandate. So there's a significant difference there, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Department of Defense should exist because we have a defense job, maybe the most important of federal jobs. There is no constitutional authorization for the department or for the federal government to be in education. So there absolutely should not be a Department of Education.
So, Neil, how practical, if you're going to try to dismantle this thing, would it be? You indicate in what you wrote at Cato is that the spending actually constitutes a small part of all education funding, but they dole out money from formula grants, discretionary grants, direct funding, and administrative funding. I don't know if you want to get into some of the math there and how that would work, but if Trump decides, and I think he wants to do this, if Linda McMahon decides to go for it, I think Congress might have to weigh in on this one. Would it be too difficult to manage and to execute?
Well, if we're talking about what they're talking about, which is kind of dismantling the department, just moving parts to other places, at least theoretically, that's not that hard. And we have to remember the Department of Education, before it existed, there was an Office of Education in the old Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. So things had to be moved to put it together, and things could be moved to take it apart. And places that these things would go actually tend to make more sense. So moving the whole federal student aid, which is primarily student loan operation, to the Department of the Treasury or the Small Business Administration makes sense, because that's where people are who are accustomed to running financial operations, which is what student loans are. It makes sense to move Indian education components to the Department of the Interior. It makes sense to move the Office of Civil Rights to the Department of Justice. So those places are already kind of in the spaces where those places would go. So I think you can move it in probably a year. It would obviously require some planning, but there's no reason it couldn't happen fairly quickly.
So the estimate here of the savings, if you would eliminate these things, would be $94.6 billion. And as you indicate, that's the fiscal year 2025 budget of the entire state of Michigan.
Yeah. So while the federal government doesn't spend a large percentage or provide a large percentage of overall education spending, that's because in part we spend a huge amount on education, especially when you include a higher education. And so if you were to get rid of almost everything the department does, it's still a pretty big amount of money. And it does vary from year to year, and it's difficult sometimes to really capture the budget because student loans have a lot of sort of intricate and confusing budgeting. But you could certainly save what to most people would be a large amount of money. And even if it's small relative to what the federal government spends overall, there are all sorts of small things end up adding up.
So I'm not going to argue that the Department of Education does any of this, because I don't think they do. But how do you then, because this is your, you know, wheelhouse, education, how do you maybe try to focus in on some of these devastating things that have happened to these kids in the aftermath of the pandemic?
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Well, the federal government isn't doing any of that. I mean, they piled money into schools, and what we see was schools were trying to figure out in school district, what do we do with it? What we need to do is go back to knowing clearly who has responsibility. And in education, if we're talking about public education, it is states, unless states want to give the responsibility to school districts. But once we know who we can say is responsible, then that's where the money should go, and they concentrate on how it's used, and they're held responsible if it doesn't work. Now, in public schools, that means, well, you vote out the school board or somebody if they don't get things done. Far more important at the state level is you go to school choice, where actually schools have to earn the money of parents because the money's attached to their kids. But if you're not going to go to that, it's still better you have true state or true local control and not say, oh, well, ask the federal government to give us money. And then since it's not really ours, we don't really have to focus on whether it's used effectively. And so we've got to return control to where the people actually are, not a whole bunch of money comes from a place far distant that actually is not responsible for the thing it's funding.
By the way, in Missouri, I think we're making some pretty good progress on some school choice issues in our legislature. I don't know if you track that at all, but we have guests here from our local delegation that's on all the time, and I think we've had a fair level of success. One of the things that I always offer, you know, as an example, and I don't know how you really manage this, but I'm friends with a woman who used to be here in St. Louis, Neil. She was the superintendent of the Jennings School District. It's an area that's probably more impoverished, certainly, than a lot of the areas around St. Louis and in North County. And she went to Wichita, so she's not here anymore. But Tiffany Anderson was someone who really led by example. She was there in the crosswalks every morning when the kids were coming to school. She talked to the parents. She wanted to make sure that she was dialed into things that were happening with the students. She wouldn't sit in meetings. So she's always been like my model for unbelievable leadership. And by the way, she did a lot of these things, and she turned the school district around with very little money. I mean, you know, that, and she even indicated to me that it's kind of backwards the way that they dole out the money, because the more success you have, you're almost punished for that. But I don't know how you get to better leadership in schools because of the teachers' union control, because that certainly is something that can, I think, make a big difference in these kids' lives. But we don't have enough Tiffany Andersons, is what I would say, Neil.
Yeah, well, if you don't fundamentally change education from top down to bottom up, bottom-up meaning the families that you're supposed to be serving controlled the money, it's very hard to get the schools to be controlled or focused on what is it that we need to provide. What is it kids need? We need to focus on what parents demand, which is presumably good education. If it's top-down, there's always going to be outsized power for organized special interests like teachers' unions, and it makes it hard for any kind of superintendent or someone to a really good superintendent to have control and to keep control. And even sort of the idea of you've got democratically controlled school districts and you have school boards where people debate things, you know, that is not necessarily the most efficient way to run anything. It doesn't give clear ownership. And I think unless we move to school choice, fundamentally bottom up, it's going to be hard to make sure that those exceptions, those really great leaders, end up being the norm. Because now it's really hard to be a real leader in a system where all the power is with other people, and they may not want what that leader wants. They may want to just sort of be left alone, which is totally normal, by the way. I mean, most people would like to have a job where they do what they want.
Well, that's a valid point. And certainly, I think Tiffany was the outlier on that. Neil, I appreciate you coming on here, talking about this. I have, you know, again, we've made some progress here. I've been talking about school choice since my days in Milwaukee. I left there about 20 years ago. There was some success even in the mid-2000s in Milwaukee in a school choice program. But I just feel like decades keep going by, and this doesn't really solidify into something that would be, you know, on a wider scale. We're certainly trying, and maybe this administration is going to get there a little bit further than others.
Well, it's the most concerted effort I've seen to get rid of the Department of Education. We have concerted efforts everywhere now for school choice. So, I mean, I don't know if the department's going away, but I do see good stuff going on in education more than I would say we saw 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil McCluskey from Cato. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. I have on the topic of education, Sue, I have a parent-teacher conference that I have to go to tonight. Those are always interesting, right? I keep teasing my daughter that she might have to repeat fourth grade since she's taking an extra spring break over the course of the next two weeks.
Oh, I'm sure that's going over
well. For those people who missed that story, so the Rockwood spring break is next week. I decided to do something really special for my family, my wife and my daughter. I bought them a cruise for spring break, but the problem is I booked it for the wrong week, so they get to go on the cruise anyway. Alexa gets 2 weeks of spring break. I'm going to check with her teacher just to see if she has to repeat fourth grade. We'll keep you posted on that tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.